This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Yeah, Aaron and I would really like to thank Parsons for hosting the exhibit and inviting us here, particularly Leticia, who kindly introduced us but was a real supporter of this from the very beginning. And I'd point out that not only are Ken Saylor and Prem Krishnamurti here, but also Julie Alt and Alan Bruton, who designed the exhibit that you're going to be seeing on the screen tonight in Venice. So we really have a full team here. And also, it should be pointed out that the concept for the exhibit, which should emerge out of this conversation, really developed not just with Aaron and I, but with Deborah Gans and Teddy Cruz, all of us in a kind of conversation and collaboration together. We ended up being curators because we didn't have pieces in the show, but Deborah and Teddy are equally on the same level in thinking about the exhibit as us in creating the whole show. What Aaron and I thought we would do right now, since so many of the people in the exhibit are here, is rather than explain the exhibit to you, is talk a little bit about the exhibit in Venice, because the whole subject of the Venice Biennale and Venice itself is an incredible context and situation to put the show in, the history of the Biennale and the kind of cinematic qualities of that city, which you're always competing with. I wanted to just mention, I'm showing you here on the screen an image by Super Studio from the 1978 Biennale, which was really their penultimate moment on the Universal stage. After this, they kind of broke up and went off on their way. And it was the time of the Strada Novissima, beginning of postmodernism, and the kind of utopian qualities that their work embodied disappeared. So this was like their kind of last gasp. And they did it, as you see, in Venice itself. This is called La Moglie di Lot, the Wife of Lot. And fittingly, it shows this metal superstructure with five primary architectural ideas created out of salt. And then this structure, which moves along a kind of rail in that table, is dripping water from the Judaica Lagoon, which is right behind you. And then these elements melt onto the plate and disappear by the end of the Biennale. And this kind of very theatrical quality of this piece speaks to a lot of what the Biennale is about. The Architecture Biennale, which, as you know, is every other year from the Art Biennale, began as a freestanding display in 1980. In the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of architecture in the Biennales. Aaron and I'll show you a couple images from earlier, fantastic pieces of artists doing architecture, architects engaging with the ideas of art in the Art Biennale, and also showing just ideas of architecture. The Strada Novissima was actually created before there was an architecture Biennale. So this has this really rich tradition. The first couple were designed by Paolo Portoghese and Vittorio Gregotti, where they really engaged with architecture as a complete subject. And I think Aaron may talk about this. I think that the spirit of art and experimentation hangs over the Biennale in a kind of way that can be healthy or not so healthy for an architectural context, because oftentimes there's this kind of need to be artistic in a kind of very obvious way. And this year's Biennale was the overall Biennale. This is a kind of complicated subject unless you've been there. The Biennale di Venezia, they select every 2 years one person to oversee the kind of general Biennale. This year, for the first time, it was an American, Aaron Betsky, and he came up with a theme, as these curators do, beyond architecture, which was meant to focus on architecture that's not just a building. It was his argument that he would love to have had a Biennale with no buildings in it. So I'm not sure if consciously or not, I was thinking about it. I'm not sure if Deborah and Teddy were thinking about it as well, but that this Biennale that we did, would come out of something that I had the sense was going to be left out of Aaron's exhibition. I kind of talked to him. I went to his press conference early on in early January, where he talked about what was going to be in the show, and I had the sense that there was a big space that was opened up there, and that space is what we put into our Biennale. So in a way, from my point of view, it grew out of that, a kind of conversation with the overall Biennale. There were a number of our exhibitors who were also, by the way, in the overall Biennale. So it gets very complicated, the way that all of this stuff plays out. And there were other pavilions who took that kind of idea of a dialogue with the main Biennale and engaged in it in their own way. The Dutch Pavilion, for example, took a chance to rethink architecture education in the wake of the destruction of TU Delft, of the university. And we have somebody who's engaged with that here, Miguel. And they had this fantastic series of conversations and discussions, and like ours, not heavy on objects, but more about process. And then there were other pavilions that just showed, the Australian showed 500 houses in Australia, 500 buildings in Australia. So it was kind of all over the map. Anyway, now maybe Aaron might want to step in here for in just a moment, but the subject of Venice, if you don't think about it before you go there and put on a show, becomes so sort of important to the whole experience of the place. It's in many respects a dying city. It had a population of 300,000 people 20 years ago. The current population is 60 to 70,000. We've been told that there are only a handful of children under the age of 12 that still live in the city. So the schools are practically non-existent. It's incredibly expensive to ride the Vaporetto. The public bus is €6 for non-Venetians. It's €1 if you're a Venetian. This is all sort of part of this context, and it's becoming even more a kind of museum. Here you see the Dordogne, the old salt works next to Santa Maria della Salute, in Venice, where a new museum is being created by François Pinault for his private collection. There's a number of these kind of private galleries in Venice, and it's becoming even more like a kind of closed off, sort of a cultural destination itself. And here was what Aaron and I, you couldn't help but be sort of taken by this image. It was kind of so horrific on the one hand and so incredible on the other, that you passed on your way from Piazza San Marco to the Giardini where the exhibit was being held. And this is the famous bridge, the Sosta di Bridge, or Bridge of Sighs, that connects two sections of the Doge's Palace. And Lancia, the car manufacturer owned by Fiat, is helping renovate the Doge's Palace. So they gave them the entire canal beside, under, beyond, in front of the Sosbury Bridge for a huge advertising sign. And if you can't quite tell, that's the bridge itself. It's a closed passageway across the canal, and they just have this enormous sign on it. So in a way, as Aaron said, the whole city is literally for sale. Do we have another one of these images maybe to show? This is the Biennale. Aaron, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, sure. So just picking up on what Bill had said, in a way the Giardini and the Biennale is one part of, in a way, the exhibit. In a certain sense, the city is the exhibit, and our little exhibit was in that context. And so what I just want to do is kind of give you a really quick overview of...
That's the gondola race you've just seen. It's a big historic event.
Some of the ways that we were thinking about the exhibition then, and especially now that we've had some time to think back on it. Hans Hacke and Pierre Bourdieu did a wonderful project. Hans Hacke is the artist, looking at kind of the peculiar marriage of nation-state politics and economic tourism that the Biennale is. Obviously, we were representing the United States, but it's also the case that you know, as Bill alluded to, we brought in, the Biennale brought in 3 times the population of Venice in that 3-month period. So there's this amazing kind of economic tourism that factors into all of this.
You want to explain what that image was?
Sure. So Hitler was invited with open arms by Mussolini in 1934. And so Hacca simply...
To the Biennale,
to Venice. And Mussolini had nationalized the Biennale at that point. And so Hitler is rumored, at least in the Berlin newspapers at the time, Hitler was described as being welcomed with open arms. And so it just Hans Hacca, the artist, had simply shown documentation of that visit to kind of call attention to, again, that peculiar marriage of cultural kind of exhibition and nation-state politics. That was on our minds, but it's also the case that Venice is always marked by politics. This is, for instance, in 1968 in San Marco. The Biennale, in this very interesting way, registers the political tumult of its period. So in each kind of period, in each articulation, you see a political protest registering in different ways. This year, the Lega Nord, a far-right party, had protested at the very opening of the Biennale, right at the entrance on Via Garibaldi. So again, you can see how, unlike in America, the Biennale is very much an occasion for political articulation. And it was for that reason, in a certain sense, that it made a lot of sense that we exhibited what we had done with the architects that we featured, a very political project in a certain sense, focusing on arguably an underrepresented kind of architectural community in America that is deserving of far more representation. Here you can see the State Department representative speaking in front of Teddy Cruz's piece that you'll see more pictures of. In a certain sense, we were, you know, turning the United States Pavilion into a representation of the most trafficked checkpoint in the world. So it was a very political gesture, hopefully an appropriate one, but it also fit within that context of Venice. Very quickly, this was the image that Bill had been alluding to before. The historical races take place, at least this past year, just a week or two right before the Biennale opened. So you can, again, see how pageantry and spectacularity is very much part of the culture of the city and of the Biennale. Which one?
Robert Wilson one with the butterflies.
It's coming up. Yeah.
In the Living Theater.
So this is in 72, the Biennale had a theme, the nature of art. And so this is a project, the mass mobilization for the liberation of 10,000 butterflies. And so you can see in kind of documentation like this, this culture of experimentation that is very much at home in the Biennale.
And the Living Theater one, do you have?
Sure.
There's a great one of Julian Beck in the Living Theater. What year was that, Aaron?
75, 76.
Right around that period, yeah. When they were performing in the streets of Venice, there's always a lot of this. There's a great one of an Israeli artist, Kadishima, driving a herd of sheep through the city from the beginning of Venice to the Giardini. You see that?
And here he's performing. He's in the middle of the Israeli pavilion, and he's painting the sheep with blue markers, with blue stripes. This is Saul Lewitt's wall drawings in the ambient art exhibition. Here you see kind of live horses being brought into the exhibition space. So there's this clear way in which at the Biennale you're not just displaying artifacts or objects, you're displaying ideas, you're engaging people in a conversation. This is Pistoletto on the left side. And this is a project on the right for the Stucchi edifice, where it's a contraption that is being used to collect everybody else's projects, and then it's being burned in the Giudecca on the right side. And then you have, Bill had alluded to before, this kind of peculiar intersection between art and architecture, especially in the years before this formal division. And so here you see Vito Acconci's Instant House from 1980. On the left, there's no clear relation, but there's a Cunellis environment.
Maybe the pipe could bring us back to the present day.
Sure.
There's one image Aaron's trying to find right now that's sort of bringing this up to date, and then we'll hand this over to the participants in the exhibit. This was one of the more popular, I can't quite call it an exhibit, but piece in the Biennale, and it was the Estonian representation in the Biennale, and it was a Gazprom pipe that they got donated from Gazprom that went more or less from the Russian to the German pavilions to talk about the fact that the Russians give Western Europe all their natural gas. And people really reacted to this in a kind of very strong way. Most of the journalists and people who were there really liked this. But I think, and I'd let Aaron sort of finish with this, it really, once again, sort of raised this issue, which we were so aware of about, Aaron always says that this is the kind of thing he would expect to see in the Art Biennale. So it raised the issue for us, if you really want to show architecture and not just focus on the object and make it like art, how do you do that in a really, compelling way for people who are sometimes expecting something as spectacular as this?
Sure. I mean, it seemed quite clear this year that there was a desire on the part of artists to inhabit public space and public sphere, the public sphere, but there was also a desire this year at the Architecture Biennale to kind of find architects kind of running after the sculptural and running after the status of the artist. And so for us, it was very peculiar. We were kind of in the middle of this kind of tension, and it was very, very clear to us that this was maybe a defining characteristic of the contemporary period, this kind of desire for artists to inhabit architectural kind of methodologies and ways of working, and vice versa for architects to be running after that kind of allure of the artist. So I think we're going to stop there. Yes. In terms of this conference, Leticia had very much wanted us to kind of try to figure out a way we could mobilize the ideas in the exhibition through a public program. And so in keeping with the idea that we were offering 16 models of practice in the exhibition, like a new taxonomy of practice in the United States, beginning with 16 articulations of bottoms-up work, we thought we would just have four of these amazing architects speak about their work, responding to some of these particular questions that we feel are important to address.
Okay, so to start with, the first little section is Beyond Exhibition with Rick Lowe. What are the politics of displaying architecture? How can we actualize the ideas presented in this and beyond space and time of the exhibit? After that are Asian provocateurs, and I'm really looking forward to hearing Rick talk about his work, since I haven't really even met him yet. He didn't come to Venice, so this is going to be really interesting for us. Great.